Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are going to talk about quilts, very specific quilt. First, a quilt that looks like a bunch of books, like library books. This is such a fun concept. Jessica, how do you say your last name? Vetor?
Veter.
Veter. Jessica Veter.
Yes.
Jessica Quilter. Yes. I should have asked you that sooner. So she is here because she has got the best pattern out there for library quilts. So, Jessica, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on today. I'm so excited.
You know, let's first tell me a little bit how you made your first quilt, because I understand it was a bit of a thing.
Yes, it's kind of a miracle that it ever was finished. I had no idea what I was doing. I knew there were three layers involved. So I just went to Joanne and I bought 6 yards of 5 colors because I thought clearly you needed that much to make a throw because, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. And I went home and I designed a simple 9-patch that I guess ended up being kind of like a Sudoku, mm-hmm. where the colors would rotate. And I chopped it up and I sewed it back together and had my quilt top. And I thought, okay, this is going good. And I had batting, and I bought spray basting. So I laid my quilt top down right side against the carpet and sprayed the basting onto the batting while I was holding it in the air and tried to smooth it down onto the quilt top, thinking everything's going great. And then I flipped it over, and I took my backing and sewed that right side to the quilt top, kind of like you would if you were making a bean bag or something,
yeah.
like a pouch.
Yeah.
And I left a small opening, and then I tried to turn it right side out, and then I was going to, you know, top stitch. Thought, okay, this is how it gets put together. Knew nothing about binding, and I ended up with a wad of the largest pile of glued quilt you could possibly imagine. With it still in its wad, I threw it in the wash, the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
And washed it and got it back out. And realized, wow, I really kind of need a book or something to show me what to do. And I told no one I was doing this because clearly, you know, that's a good thing. I didn't want anybody telling me what to do. So I went and got a book and followed the directions, and I ended up with my first quilt, which was done a little bit better than the first try.
Oh my gosh. You know, I love these first quilt stories, Jessica. You know, sometimes,
I do too.
You know, and sometimes you wonder why we made another one, you know, after.
I know. Well, I had, you know, 5 yards left from each color needed to be used.
Right. We had to do something. Now you have a bookcase, you know, a library quilt, however you want to call it, but it's
sure.
one that is just, people just love it. When did you make that?
This was made, I guess, this past fall. It was probably, I'm thinking August is when I kind of started maybe, and I may be really off base, but it was in the fall time.
Okay.
So, I just really needed to do it. I've been looking at different ones for a long time, and I couldn't really find any patterns that mm-hmm. were giving me instructions on what I wanted to accomplish. So I just kind of went for it and did it based off of, you know, strip piecing. So I started with a jelly roll and just kept sewing background fabric to the edge of a jelly roll strip. And then before I knew it, I was like, wow, okay, this is kind of cool. You can adjust the size and make the bookcase be the size you wanted. And I would post a picture here and there. Mm-hmm. And people just really, such good feedback and such good support on it that I thought, okay, well, now I'm going to try a tilted book. And then, okay, well, maybe we'll try stacked books. And, oh, we need trinkets. We need a gnome on this shelf.
Right.
So I just kind of went for it. But the main reason why I wanted to do it was because I really wanted a way to display my selvages, because I think of them as memories from trips I've taken, from projects my mom and I have worked on together, quilts I've made for people and, you know, just designers that I admire. Mm-hmm. So I just really wanted a place to put them. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat if there was like a book that had all these selvages or scrapbook? So I was kind of thrown around that concept, and then that's where it came about. So
it's just so darn clever. And
thank you.
And the fact that some tilt and you have some stacked and some straight.
Yeah.
What is one or two tips of how to be successful picking fabric for this?
Oh, that's a good question. So for me, I went with the selvage dictating what the background or the book should be. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I have salvaged fabric from yours, the one that says a fat quarter is not a body part, and it kind of looks like salvages. And there's a lot of green on that one because it's the green colorway. And I thought, okay, I really need maybe something like a dark green so that this will shine against that background. So all the fabrics that are the book fabrics are either grunge or, you know, solids or a very, very low tone-on-tone print so that when you're looking at it, the scale that you're seeing is the size of what's printed on the selvage, because that's really what you want to see. So when you're looking at it and it's this beautiful rainbow, it's all because the selvage is doing its job. That's kind of the way I think of it. I may be way off base. I don't know. That's just how I look at it.
No, I think it's a great tip because it's kind of tempting, maybe, especially for someone like me, to go and get a floral or a really snazzy, you know, black and white print. But then you're going to lose that.
I did a black and white test block. And even though I loved the fabric and I'm a huge fan of black and white prints, it just was not right. And you really have to look at the selvage and let it dictate to you what needs to be the background and try it, lay it against different ones and, you know, let it tell you what it needs to be. And you might have to rip it off and try another one. It does happen. So you just really have to think what, you know, and if it's what color you want to be shown. There's several selvages that have a rainbow. And so you've got all the color choices. So you may look at your bookshelf and say, well, I've got like 7 green on this one. Maybe we should go for a red or blue, something to give it some variety. So
these are great tips. That's what I wanted to do is be sure we gave people something that they could now sort of go forward, particularly so many people collect the edges, you know, so the way to do them. Yeah.
Right.
I know I want to, you know, these segments are so quick all the time, but you have another really wonderful story about a quilt you made from an American Patchwork and Quilting magazine project.
So, in 2009, there was a magazine that came out with a block on the front, and I believe it's, I don't know, it's just a star block, and it's very scrappy, and it's issue 98, but it's the front cover, and there was just this time in my life where I had a lot of at-home time with my son before he was in school, and I was sewing and sewing and sewing a lot, and I discovered batik fabrics and fell in love with them and was severely disappointed in my stash. Like, it just angered me that I had no batiks. And I was like, I know the way to get rid of this and to need to buy more fabric is to chop everything I own up and turn it into a quilt. So I literally dumped all my fabric onto the table and I just chopped and chopped and chopped until there was nothing left cutting out for this one block. And I ended up with 100 blocks. And three quilts, one was a king, one was a throw, and then another was like a twin.
Right.
And there were over 5,500 pieces altogether. And all the, I know I counted them. It's ridiculous how obsessed I am.
Oh, so, my goodness.
I know.
You know, I just love that you just cut it all up because you're like, well, I can't get new till I get rid of this and make something.
I keep my stash under control with some plastic shoe boxes, and I don't let it go beyond that. So if it's starting to get too full and I know I want more, I just use what I have really quick and something really scrappy. And then I'm like, oh, I have room now. I have to buy more. So
You're quite an inspiration. I mean, I think everybody should hang out with you. We're going to make lots of quilts this way.
Anytime I can enable anyone to buy fabric, it's my pleasure.
So, Jessica, another part of your business is you do memory quilts. And I know we only have about a minute and a half.
Sure.
Could you tell me what you do with the how you make them for other people, right?
Yes. So it started out just word of mouth that I was a quilter, and I had a lady ask me if I would turn some T-shirts into a quilt. I said, sure, I'll give that a try. And as I got to know her, I learned more about her family, and it just struck a chord in my heart to become a part of their history, which is another huge love of my life. I love history. So I began to make more of those, and really it just comes down to I love being a part of someone's story and being able to help them organize that into something that either is a gift or a memory. I think that's just a really special part about being a quilter.
What, have you made one of for your own family yet, the T-shirt quilts?
A few. A few. I have a picky son, and so he has collected many for the point of me making T-shirt quilts for him. So he has several. My husband has a couple, and my mom is a marathon runner who I just admire her so much. She does everything. And I made a few of her marathon T-shirt quilts. So it's been quite a privilege to do that.
Do you have a particular like foundation that you like for your T-shirt quilt making?
I have about three or four thin Pellon, iron-on Pellon that I'll buy. And it's whatever they have the most of at the store. There's not really been a particular one that I'm sold on and that I only use that one. There is one that does come in black that I find particularly wonderful because you cannot see it through a white T-shirt, or I haven't been able to.
Oh.
And I find that it's, for some reason, I don't know if it's the dye or what, but for some reason it works really, really well. So if I can find it, which is kind of hard, I do like to use the black one.
So I didn't even know it came that they had black.
I know. It was an accident. They were out of the white, and I thought, oh, we'll just give this a try. And it was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I love this stuff.
Well, I want everybody to visit you at jessicaquilter.com and see your projects and follow you online.
That would be great. Check me out on Instagram. And I have my pattern for free today on Craftsy, on my Broken Ladders pattern, which is a modern take on the Jacob's Ladder pattern. So I hope people can enjoy that too.
Thank you, Jessica. We'll be right
back. Thank you.
Quilting, thanks. Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Join the 1 million pillowcase challenge in March for the ultimate pillowcase competition. Gather a team and compete with other shops and groups during the month of March to make pillowcases, earn points, and be crowned the ultimate pillowcase champion. The group with the most points at the end of the competition will be awarded $1,000 cash and a visit from an editor for a talk and trunk show. Or just watch the action with weekly voting and daily prizes. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/pillowcase madness for more information and to sign up to participate.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or many more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcase. Quilt along with us in 2016. Join our third annual quilt along by making a quilt, a one block pillow, or all four projects featuring plus sign designs. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/quiltalong for a list of participating bloggers and designers, and to see photos of what staff members and other readers are sewing. Share your photos on social media using the hashtag APQQuiltAlong to join the fun.
follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to go back in time a little bit. We'll go from a modern quilt that's been made in the past year with Jessica's. And we're going to talk about an exhibit now that's at the Abby Aldrich Rockefeller Folk Art Museum in Williamsburg, Virginia. I've been there before to talk to the curators about the quilt exhibits that they put up, and I'm so excited that Linda Baumgartner is here again to talk to me about the current exhibit. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you, Pat.
You know, I am always so excited to hear about a new quilt exhibit, and so I'm going to have to take a road trip down to see you again.
We hope you will.
Yeah. Tell people just real briefly what the museum is.
The Art Museum of Colonial Williamsburg is actually two museums under one roof. We have decorative arts before about 1840 in one museum and folk art in the other museum. That's where the African American quilt exhibit is mounted.
And that's where do you almost always have a quilt exhibit in that one?
Almost always, yes, except for brief turnaround times between exhibits.
Mm-hmm. And you are the curator of textiles and costumes.
Yes, it's
what an exciting job. I don't know, all of us would be like, play with fabric all day? old fabric, new fabric. Why don't you tell me what the exhibit exactly is, this new one, and how long it'll be there, that kind of thing.
The exhibit will run through this year. It's an exhibition of 12 African-American quilts that date from about the 1870s to the 1990s. We have quilts from various locations in America, including a few nice examples from G's Bend in Alabama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the quilters, the quilters of today, that's one of the ones that we all know about
from
recent years. Yeah. So then who's do you have in the exhibit from the G's Bend group?
We have several of the Petway quilters, Rita Mae Petway and Arlanzia Petway. And we also have some little known and little exhibited quilters. One of them who grew up in Alabama and lived very near G's Bend was a woman named Susanna Allen Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's always fun then. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that particular quilt, maybe Susanna Allen Hunter's piece that you have?
Yes, she was a prolific quilter. She grew up in rural Wilcox and Dallas counties, Alabama. Her family moved around. She was married to a tenant farmer, and she is known to have made at least 100 quilts during her lifetime. Her family says that she made them because the cabin they lived in was very cold, and they just piled the quilts on during the winter months. And now, of course, we cherish her quilts for their artistic mm-hmm. qualities as well.
Yeah, and, you know, as you were putting this exhibit together, what about that particular quilt did you find interesting that you wanted to include it?
Well, actually, we have three quilts by Susanna to show three of her different styles. The one that might be my favorite is a work clothes quilt. It's actually double-sided. One side has denim jeans and overalls and khaki pants pieced together. The other side includes a few dress fabrics, so it really has two different looks.
Yeah, and that'll be like different weights of fabric and thicknesses.
Right. It's quite a conglomeration of textiles that somehow all works visually when you stand back and look at it as an artistic object.
Right. You know, when you're hanging these in exhibit, how are they displayed in the museum?
They're displayed on inside large cases on a gradual slope, which helps to take some of the stress from hanging off the quilt, and the lights come on when the visitor walks into the room. So the quilts are very well protected if no one is actually in the room looking at them.
So this one with the work clothes, because it is two-sided, are you able to show both sides?
In this case, we opted to show the denim side.
Okay.
It would have been nice if we had a double-sided case, but we had to show just one side.
I know. Can you imagine like a rotating case, right?
Oh, wouldn't that be fabulous?
Yeah. Did you have somebody there twirling it for us when we come
mm-hmm.
to visit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So out of this group that you have hanging, I thought that when you sent me some information on the quilts, I thought Anna Jane Parker sounded pretty interesting. Can you tell me about that one?
That is a fascinating quilt. It's actually the earliest one in the exhibit. Anna Jane was born in North Carolina in 1841, but she and her husband, Charles Parker, moved to St. Louis, and by the 1860s and 70s, she was a free seamstress whose granddaughter reported that she sewed beautifully. The quilt actually descended in the family until the 20th century, and eventually it found its way to the museum collection.
So how do you find out these stories, Linda? I mean, I just love the stories. I know that you do, I think, on a personal level. But, you know, how do you get that story with the quilt?
In many cases, the stories get handed down in the family. The woman who donated the quilt to us, Anna Jane's log cabin quilt, knew her personally, knew the descendant personally, I should say, mm-hmm. and the descendant had actually written a little book giving all of her ancestors' life stories. In this case, we have an incredibly documented quilt.
Wow. That's kind of unusual, isn't it?
That is very unusual. Yes,
right. You're probably
in other cases. In other cases, like Susanna Ellen Hunter, her grandson is still living, and one can get information from the family that way.
Yeah. Do you find that you come across that kind of extensive documentation? How often? I mean, how often does that happen?
Not often enough. With these quilts, some of which are 20th century, were closer to the time that they were made, and mm-hmm. Somewhat more likely to get the histories of the quilts.
Now, because she was a seamstress, did you notice were there some other like in the work clothes one? Were there some other unusual fabrics?
The woman who made the work clothes quilt was a farmer's wife. The woman who was the seamstress made the silk log cabin quilt, and it's got a beautiful array of dress fabrics included in that quilt, probably scraps from her seamstress work.
Being that you also do, clothing, did it look any different to you? Did you see like, oh, this, could you tell that she sewed a lot of clothing?
We could tell from the array of fabrics in the quilt, dress fabrics, some ribbons, and they were really just a textbook example of 1870s and 80s silks that women would have been wearing, in this case, in St. Louis.
Yeah, and that in St. Louis would have been a little bit more wealthier area.
Yes, by this time, it was a fairly prosperous town.
Yeah. How cool. This is just the neatest, neatest stuff. Now, when people come, how can they get a curated tour? Because I know you did that for me, and it really added such immense depth to me enjoying the exhibit.
We have a number of tours that our visitors can take. We have very talented museum educators who give special tours, and then the curators take turns giving a tour called Meet the Curator. Those are on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday afternoons, and it gives you a chance to see the quilts or furniture or whatever tour is being going on at the time through the eyes of the curator. And of course, groups can make special arrangements to have a special tour.
Oh, okay. That would be great because like a guild could come or a group of,
right.
of
mm-hmm.
quilters.
Exactly.
Call in advance. I know that I just thought it was just so much better than just reading it because you know so much more than you can actually put on the paperwork with it.
Yeah, well, labels have to be short enough so that people can stand and read.
Right. We don't make a big novel on this.
Right.
Right. Do you yourself travel and give talks?
Occasionally, yes. As our schedules allow, we do give special lectures.
Okay, and that's kind of on behalf of the museum then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, so if somebody was interested in that, maybe they were down local to that area, they could contact through the museum link, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, well, and so the question everybody wants to know, have you made a quilt yet?
I know how to quilt, and I'm actually saving up fabrics for a family memory quilt. I have some of my parents' clothing, including my dad's overalls, and I thought I would make a log cabin quilt with the memory fabrics as the center of each log cabin unit.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. You know, this has been so much fun, Linda. Thank you for
Well, thank
me.
You so much. It was delightful.
Everybody can go out to the website and learn more about it and go visit. We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me for a fun video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Luck. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project with me. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for the price of one. That's a full year free. Every issue is packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, detailed photography, complete materials lists, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today at allpeoplequilt.com. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And first, I want to tell you that if you have not been checking the Moda Fabrics blog, it's blog.modafabrics.com. Right now, they're starting to make announcements for new designers and new collections. So that's always really exciting because there's an interview like Debbie Maddie has just joined the Moda design team. And there's an article about her on March 11th. So I want to be sure you're checking that out with our wonderful friends at Moda Fabrics. So now this is like, the second half of the show, we're going to have so much fun because I have got, yes, Katya Merrick, who is doing amazing things with hexagon quilts. And I know that a bunch of you are making her projects. And so we're going to go like deep dive and talk about a whole lot of fun things and not just hexagons. So hi, Katya. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for inviting me on your show.
So, you know, first of all, I want to get a little backstory because I know that you tell people you don't even know when you started to sew. It's like you were born sewing.
That's true, yes. Yeah, I don't remember exactly when it all started. It just seems that I always did.
But you also told me, or I read somewhere, that, you know, you kind of saw quilts when your family, like, bought a camp.
Yeah, we bought a, it was a camp with housekeeping cottages in a campground, and all the beds were covered in, I'm not going to call them quilts, but more coverlets, because we weren't actually quilted through the layers. And that was the first time I'd come across anything like that in my life. So that was the year I was 14.
Ah. So you really can remember that then? They were really...
Oh, distinctly. Yeah. I was just so enthralled with these quilts and the idea of putting all these fabrics and colors together to create a totally new look. Before that, I had done a lot of things. I'd done needlepoint and crocheting, all sorts of different kinds of crafts, and sewing a lot of clothes for my dolls before that. But this is the first time I came across quilting.
So did you decide to make a quilt when you saw those?
Yes, I did. I took one of the coverlets on the bed. It was an old version of a grandmother's fan, and I replicated it. I cut out templates out of thick cardboard, which was the back of one of my sketch pads, and I traced around all of them. I didn't know anything about quarter-inch seams at the time, but I did know that you had to stay on the line. Oh. So I recreated this look in an almost identical version.
Well, at least you knew about the line part. That was pretty good.
I knew enough to sew on the lines, that's for sure.
Right. Well, when you get it, if you hadn't heard Jessica talk at the beginning of the show, you can talk about her first quilt where she threw the whole messy thing in the wash that wasn't even done, had to take it apart. So,
goodness.
So did you do this quilt like quickly, or did it take you a little while?
Well, I call it my 7-year quilt. And a lot of people think when I say that it took me 7 years to make it. Not quite. I worked on it once every 7 years. So I started it when I was 14. I worked on it again when I was 21 and newly married. I worked on it again the year I was 28 and had young toddlers in the house. And then when I was 35, I was guild president that year, and that was the year I finished it.
Oh, my goodness.
Once every 7 years.
I don't want to go back and find one that old. How did you stay motivated to work on it?
You know, I don't know. Lots of projects came and went during that time, and somehow it was always there in the back of my mind, and, you know, I knew it had to be done. So.
Oh, okay. Well, there was no option then. You had to finish it, so.
Yes,
I see. Now, you are a shop owner. You live in Canada, and your shop is called Katya's Quilt Shop. I love that. I love that it's you and personal. You are also, your shop is one of the shops featured in Quilt Sampler during the years. Now, I want to know, I haven't been there, but I want to know, Katya, how did you end up with a quilt shop? How did that happen?
Well, I was in banking all my life, and banking was something I fell into. I started working in the bank the year I was 17, and on and off, I worked in banking for 22 years, and it was a job I did well, but that really didn't inspire me, or my passion wasn't there. And I had sewn all those years, and even before I knew that what I was doing was quilting, I had sewn all the time. And then in 1995, after we moved to Kamloops, we lost our last quilt shop, our last source for quilting fabric in Kamloops. So if we wanted quilting fabric, we had to go out of town.
Oh.
And it took me another couple of years, and I finally got to the point where I went and talked to some of my friends that I had worked with in banking, and I said, look, help me put this together. Tell me what I can do. And I was surprised with their answers, and I thought, wow, I really can do this. So I jumped in with both feet, and the rest is history.
Wow. So you were, you know, being that you have a finance background, that's, you know, you knew what you were going into to open a store, any kind of business probably. You probably worked with businesses all the time.
I did. Yeah. I think that background really helped me out. You know, I knew it wasn't all going to be just sitting and sewing and playing, as some people might think. I knew that there was a lot of behind the scenes things that needed to go on, and the business of the business itself needed to be done.
Right. It's just if it was easy to own our own businesses, everybody would do it, right? It's
right.
So you have this fabulous store, and what year were you in the magazine? Do you remember?
Fall of 2008.
Ah, fantastic. So people can go get out their back issues and look through there and mm-hmm. see the shop. You have a book called The New Hexagon, and I want to talk a little bit about that and how it happened and the community that's come about. So first, just tell me, were you always in love with hexagons, or how did you decide you liked working with them this much?
Well, let's go one step backwards and and ask, was I always in love with English paper piecing?
Yeah.
And the answer is no, I wasn't. At first, I was really hesitant, and I balked at the idea. And the year I was Guild president, we did an English paper piecing workshop, and it went through my mind, like, why would we do this? We have machines, we have rotary cutters, why would we do this? And then early on, when I opened the store, I hired one of my first employees. Her name is Carla. And Carla English paper pieced every day. And watching here just sort of became infectious. Mm-hmm. And she still was thread basting all the time. But all of a sudden, new tools came on the market. And when glue came on the market specifically, and I started seeing what people were doing with the glue pens, I mm-hmm. thought, this is for me. I'd done a lot of thread basting beforehand. I had made a hexagon quilt out of 1-inch hexagons. I had done the rose star blocks. Mm-hmm. They were featured in the Australian Patchwork and Quilting at one point. I'd made Christmas ornaments, but seriously, glue revolutionized my life. All of a sudden, I could see what I could do. And then all of a sudden, it became hexagon obsessed. It just seemed to be the new shape, and my mind doesn't shut off sometimes. So mm-hmm. I sleep with a pencil and paper by my bed, and all of a sudden, I could see all these hexagon possibilities and what I could do not with hexagons, but by designing inside the hexagon.
You know, that's kind of the fascinating part. You know, I'm still, I've done hexagon things, just not a lot of them. But the total fascination for me is how you've made them look more complex and the fabric selections. So, this started, I think you told me it started like in your shop first, that you were doing something for your own customer base.
Yes. Yeah, I'd been thinking a lot about what to do with the blocks, different things to do with the blocks, and it was triggered by a couple of things. I received a K-facet fabric called Millefiori in the mm-hmm. store, and when I looked at that fabric, it immediately struck a chord with me. And I looked up the definition of millefiori because I wanted to know what it meant. And mm-hmm. it refers to an ancient glass caning technique where they take canes of glass and fuse them together into floral-type units, and then they cross-cut them and embed mm-hmm. them in more glass, usually mm-hmm. clear, to create mm-hmm. designs that are repeated around a center. And they create these wonderful kaleidoscope effects, and that's what I was seeing in the fabric. And I thought, wow, that's perfect, because I'm also really addicted to colored glass.
Anything,
you know, when the sun hits it and it shines through that colored glass. So that was something I wanted to replicate. But not just with anything. I wanted mm-hmm. to replicate it with the blocks out of my book.
Okay. So let's talk about how to get the most out of your fabrics, because I think I actually just had this conversation. I was teaching the other day, and someone said to me, "Can you really explain what it means to fussy cut? How does that work?" Because you've gotten really good at it, Katya.
It's what you call being a little OCD, I think, sometimes. Fussy cutting is all about choosing the part of the fabric that you want to cut and cutting specific design elements to get the look that you're after, as opposed to cutting strips and subcutting them into squares and rectangles. Mm-hmm. So you're actually choosing what you want. And by picking certain things out of the fabric, you can create a different look. You can draw the eye into the block or out of the block by creating a curve where none exists. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the pieces in my hexagons are obviously sharp-edged straight lines, but I've created a curved look in a lot of them by using the curved edge of a leaf or a petal. So there's things that you can do with fabric, even fabric that you aren't maybe so fond of. Mm-hmm. You can make it look spectacular.
And, you know, how do you sort of approach it? Because, you know, are you making like Swiss cheese out of the fabric a lot of the time?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I have a lot of Swiss cheese. And, you know, when I teach a class, sometimes people will look at me when I show a piece and they say, but what a waste. And I say, No, there are so many possibilities left in this piece of fabric that mm-hmm. you can cut in between those holes because you're cutting on repeats. So those pieces that are left in between are also identical repeats, and you can use them for another project.
Now, do you ever use like little mirrors? They've been out for many years to sort of see how it's going to look next to each other.
You know, I do to a certain extent. I have mm-hmm. a mirror, and I use it more to show customers what the potential mm-hmm. of the fabric is. Mm-hmm. But you really have to understand that the mirror creates its own reflection. Mm-hmm. So what you see is not going to be what you get every mm-hmm. second one, because you're looking in a mirror. Every second one will be flipped, so they will swirl around the center of your block as opposed to being mirrored in every second one. So it shows you the potential,
but I
think it's limiting.
Yeah. Now, with your book, you have, what we're going to do is we have maybe like a minute until the break. So tell me a little bit, just real quickly, about where on your site, for people who have your book, that they can go to get more, you have like extra information.
Oh, the information for the new Hexagon Millefiori Quilt Along, mm-hmm. and also for this year's Quilt Along, Box on the Go for Quilts on the Grow. If you just go to my website and go to the tabs at the top of the website and let Quilt Alongs drop down and click on those, all the information is there. All the information for last year's Quilt Along, which was the Millefiori, is okay. there and will continue to be there and be available to people. So if you're just starting now, that's okay.
Yeah.
And then the Blocks on the Go for Quilts on the Grow, we're up to month number 3, and I add the new instructions each month.
Okay. So this is what we're going to do now is take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about sort of quilting together online. What do you think, Katya?
Okay, that sounds good.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Join American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, giveaways, and more. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Katya Merrick here of Katya's Quilt Shop, and we're talking about hexagon quilts from her book, The New Hexagon. So, Katya, when you started this, you built an online group so that everybody could sew along with you and follow along. Had you ever done that before online?
No, this was a real first for me. And I was not really that internet savvy when I started all this.
Bet you are now.
Well, I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. I've learned a lot. And forming the Facebook group, for example, was by request. Mm-hmm. I had had a number of emails from people who had signed up for my online quilt along, and I was spreading the news via my shop Facebook page. But mm-hmm. all of a sudden I was asked, could we please have a Facebook group just for the quilt along? Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be a lot of work to set it up. I didn't realize how easy it was to set up a group. So I did it that night, And the next morning, we had our first 384 members. Mm-hmm. And every day, new people signed up, and it just blew me away. And we still continue to have new people signing up every single day. And right now, the Millefiori group, the New Hexagon Millefiori Quilt Along, is it's over 9,000 people.
Yeah.
And I think that's not bad. It's not quite the number that you have, but I think it's great.
Oh, it is fantastic. I mean, your quilt is one that it's kind of a commitment. You know, it's a process. It's larger. You know, everything takes a little bit of time. So it's just fabulous that you have so many people working on it. Can you describe your main quilt for the Millefiori one?
The main process?
Or the main quilt?
I broke it down into 12 months.
Okay.
There's actually 15 full and partial rosettes within the quilt.
Okay.
Each of the rosettes is comprised of blocks from the book. Mm-hmm. And I tell people each month which blocks they're making, how many of them, if they're used exactly as in the book or if they're making slight alterations to them.
Okay.
And then they proceeded to make those.
And then you have a new one you started for this year. What is the difference? How does that one look?
This year's is, I started a new Facebook group as well, because I didn't want to have a new group every year, and I already have a plan for next year. I didn't want to have to start a new group again. So I've started Katya Malik's Quilt With Me, and that is the one we're running Blocks on the Go for Quilts on the Grow through this year.
Okay.
And the premise behind this quilt is that you make a block, and you make what I call a quiltlet out of it, a little tiny quilt, which is the backing, the batting, the block itself, and you turn the backing forward. And it's a quilt-as-you-go method, so it's 100% hand done from beginning to end. English paper pieced, hand appliqued, big stitch, hand quilted. Mm. And then when all those little quiltlets are done, you sew them together with a ladder stitch. And I basically do two ladder stitches back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But each time you finish a block, you're finished. So if you decide to do one block, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide never to make another one, or let's say you go back to it 3 months from now and make another block, you can add that to the first one. And when that block is done and that little quiltlet is done, you're still finished.
Yeah.
So there won't be this quilt at the end that then needs to be quilted and bound, etc. So as many blocks as you decide to make, that's how big your quilt is, and you're always done.
I like it. That's pretty fun. Your book is kind of like a guidepost. I mean, you have patterns in it, but each one, being that it's a standalone block, can, you know, you're showing people different ways to put them together and use them. It's brilliant. It's so much fun.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, and a lot of people think it is fun. A lot of people have hopped on board my little hex-addicted bandwagon, so I think they're enjoying it.
So what surprised you the most when you opened this all up online, from going from, you know, in-person things in your shop to now having people all over the world in one place? Did anything surprise you? Anything fun?
Well, it surprised me, I think, that the number of people I could interact with in a given day, and from where. Mm-hmm. When the people started to sign up, I have a spot on my website where they register, and it's basically an honor system thing. The registration is only so that I have an idea how many people are out there officially. And I looked at some of the email addresses, and some of them you can tell where people are from, and some of them you can't. And they are in all corners of the world, these people that are quilting along. And I couldn't believe that I would get a question from somebody, let's say, in Taiwan or Brazil or Holland. I have people quilting along in almost every country, and it was just unbelievable. And also the community that these people formed. They're not only interacting with me, they're interacting with each other. And that just blew me away.
Yeah, that is the one really fun aspect of online, because they're working with each other online, and then they actually want to meet each other. You know, they...
That's right. Yeah, they formed their own tribe.
Yes.
In both groups, as a matter mm-hmm. of fact. And a lot of followers cross over to one of the other groups as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing, the interaction and the support. And, yeah, that's what blew me away. And the power of the Internet. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the power of the Internet and how this could grow and where it could travel.
Yeah, we're really excited, Jane Davidson and I, that you agreed to join us for our splendid sampler project, because you designed a really special block for us.
Thank you. Yes, I was so excited when you asked. I was actually teaching in the Netherlands at the time, and
right.
one of my staff sent me an email and said, did you receive this email? Because I went to a different address at the time.
Oh.
And I thought, wow, they're asking me.
Oh, and I've seen your block, and it's so cute. Everybody's going to love it.
Thanks. Yeah. So I hope they will.
I think they will. Of course. You did it. They will.
Mm-hmm.
So what is sort of new going on in your shop? What, tell us where it is and a little bit about it.
I'm in the central interior of British Columbia, and we're actually in a semi-arid desert region. It's a little pocket of semi-arid climate. So that means we have a lot of sagebrush here, and we're at the meeting of two rivers. It looks very much around, if anybody has traveled through Oregon, it looks mm-hmm. very much like around Sisters and Bend, Oregon, except we don't have quite the juniper trees here. And as far as the shop and myself, I do have the new Hexagon Perpetual Calendar coming out through Martingale this year, and that's 365 plus a bonus, of course, for leap year. new fractured hexagon blocks, and ooh. I've also already planned a quilt along for next year using mm-hmm. some of those blocks.
Wow. So, you know, give me a tip or two for the hexagon, since you're now, like, you know, the reigning expert. I'm crowning you the expert today. Wear this crown. What are, like, two or three things, like, somebody who's never done it or hasn't done it in a long time, you know, that they should do or learn?
The hexagons, or more specifically English paper piecing, for example, when you think about it, we're using these paper shapes that fit together exactly, and we're putting fabric around them. And they're no longer going to fit together exactly, but we still expect them to. But we've put that extra layer in between. So sometimes people have a bit of trouble getting the beginning and the end to come together properly. Mm-hmm. So I always tell them, take a few stitches at the beginning, mm-hmm. make sure that your end points come together, and use a clover clip or something to hold that end together, and then ease in the middle. And everything will come out just perfectly.
Oh, so what, you know, the glue part, are you using glue sticks instead of, like, liquid glues?
Yes. Yeah. I use the glue sticks, but you have to be aware and use a fabric glue stick or a glue pen, as I call it. Number one, it has a smaller surface area, so you can get better application and more precise application of your glue. If you use a commercial made-for-paper glue stick, you are going to have a heck of a time removing your papers.
Ah.
And this is about having fun and making it work for you. Mm-hmm. The fabric ones that are made for fabric, they go on great, they go on colored, they dry clear, so you can see if it's too dry to stick, and you can also get them out easily. I use an awl when I take mine out. I know some people have put punched little holes in the center of their papers so that they can put an awl or something sharp inside the center and just pop them out that way. But yes, definitely use a fabric glue pen.
You know, I think that's a great thing to point out, because I don't know people have glue sticks all over the place, and they just think, oh, well, it's a glue stick, it's a glue stick. But it's
well,
not.
Well, ask me how I know this.
Yes.
Because one day I was without my fabric glue pen, and I thought, oh, well, I'll just use this, and I won't name the brand, but I'll use this one here. It's, it should be fine. Mm-hmm. Well, I got one block done, and the papers never came out of it because it was stuck permanently. And I might have been able to soak it out, but then the block would have been ruined.
Now, did you tell me that you are quilting all of these, all of your own quilts?
I am now. I didn't used to. I used to have a friend that quilted, but now I'm quilting my own. I bought myself an APQS Lucy, and I love her, although she doesn't get used nearly enough. So with my Millefiori quilt, for example, I thought, I want this to be 100% me. I also knew that I wanted to replicate the designs within my quilt in my quilting, and I wanted that kaleidoscope effect where each section of each rosette is identical, just like in my fabric choices, I wanted the quilting to be identical. But I didn't want my quilt to be about the quilting. I wanted it to be about the quilt itself. So I used a 50-weight Aurifil thread in a light gray, and it's sunk in beautifully, and it complements the quilt, but it doesn't. It isn't all about the quilting.
Yeah. It must have felt really nice to do that quilt yourself.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It is just so spectacular and so gorgeous, and I can't wait to see what's going on this year. I'm going to have to go check out your goings on for the Blocks on the Go, for Quilts on the Grow. So cute, Katya.
Oh, thank you.
Now we have about 30 seconds, and so do you have a newsletter for people to sign up?
On my website, you can sign up for my newsletter, or you can sign up for any of the quilt alongs I have going. And I want to thank you, by the way, for inviting me on your show. I've had a great time, and hopefully people have learned something new.
I think they have. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit the magazine's different goings-on at allpeoplequilt.com, where there are videos and tutorials, free patterns. There's a newsletter for American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, and so you can keep up with what's happening. Also, if you're getting the issues this year by mail, I'm doing the mystery. So I'm Pat Sloan. See you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.